2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Hans Olsen, Scott Girard. This is 97.5 DKSL Sports Zone. I'm down here in San Diego, Utah State, San Diego State. Big key Mountain West Conference game coming up tonight. David James is actually on vacation, Hans, but he's going to come by and do color with me tonight. So me and DJ on the call for this one. Should be fun.
I just hope you don't get that call. You passive-aggressive punk. I'm not even doing sports beat tonight.
Talking sports. Yeah.
I'm not. It's DJ. I
don't know if I'm going to make it.
You know how serious this is when I won't even do TV. You know how I feel about TV. It's really important. But I'm not even doing that.
Oh, man. I don't really have a lot. A lot of times people say, do you regret recording people's phone calls, saying they're not coming into work and then replaying them? And my answer to that is no, not really.
No.
I think that if you call in sick, that's your right, and HR will allow you to do that, and that's great. You have a certain amount of sick days. But then also I feel like I can take those phone calls and then record them and then put them in the system and replay them.
And for historical purpose only. Like, you need records.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I'm not, you know. If you get mocked because of it, that's not my fault. I'm just, you know, this is all for documentation purposes.
Yeah.
That's all.
Hey, you talked about this matchup tonight that you've got, Utah State and San Diego. San Diego right now, the top of the Mountain West Conference. How good are they? How good is how tough is this going to be?
It's going to be a battle for sure. I mean, Utah State comes in at 16-4. San Diego State has ratcheted up a lot of wins. And it's funny because San Diego State's been the class of this conference for the last several years, but with New Mexico, you know, off to that undefeated start that they went on, and Boise State's playing well, and UNLV still getting headlines. It seems like San Diego State's just been taking a back seat, but they're still a really, really good team. And yeah, it'll be a fun battle tonight, Utah State and San Diego State. And joining us now, the great Ken Pomeroy on the web at kenpom.com. Get there now. Hans and I are huge fans of that site. Ken, how you doing?
Hey, Ken.
What's up, guys? Always great to talk to you.
It's great to hear from you, man. How you been? You been holding up okay through this crazy weather?
I've been holding up okay, actually. I actually kind of enjoy the winter weather, Hans. Okay. I don't have to travel anywhere. I don't have to commute. My apologies to people who do, but I don't mind being a shut in during the day and letting the snow fall and getting some work done at home.
Well, not to rub it in a little bit, I am here in San Diego because it's Utah State, San Diego State, big one tonight. Utah State's kind of struggled in their big, you know, if you want to use the net lingo, the quad one games with losses to Boise State and Nevada. How big is this game for the resume for Utah State tonight?
It's pretty big. Obviously there's kind of a free-for-all at the top of the conference standings, and Utah State is in that mix. You look at their schedule the rest of the way, and you know, they're a fairly significant underdog in this game. It's obviously a winnable game, but, I mean, clearly the Aztecs are the favorite. And then after this, like, almost every game is a toss-up. You know, they have a home game against Air Force later on in the year, which they should win. But other than that, it's, you know, it's just so competitive in this league that, obviously if you can get a win in a case where you're not expecting it, it would be enormous. I mean, there's probably going to end up being three or four bids from the conference. the way things work out, that's probably how it's going to go. And there's obviously five teams competing for them. So I think Utah State has the, you know, the weakest resume of those five right now. So obviously getting a win here would be a huge help for them and you know, take a hit to San Diego State as well.
When you just look across the board of the in-state teams, all the way from UVU, who's done some great things, to Utah, that has put together some good wins here back-to-back, and now that head to Oregon for a road swing, to Utah State. Who right now do you feel is playing the best basketball, Ken?
Well, let me just walk you through this before I commit to an answer. Utah is playing pretty well, 7-3 in the Pac-12. They got some work to do to get the tournament bid, but obviously have that great win over Arizona. Utah lost to BYU. BYU has had its struggles this year. BYU lost to Utah Valley. Utah Valley, they've had a pretty good year. You know, if they get in the tournament, they'll be maybe a 13 seed, something like that. They lost to Utah State. Utah State's had a good year. You know, we just talked about them. They lost to Weber State. Weber State has, you know, kind of been up and down this year, but they lost to Utah Tech. So maybe Utah Tech's the best team in the state, guys. I don't know.
Underrated Utah Tech. Flying under the radar, as always.
Yeah, give them some coverage. But I think the real answer is, you know, we're ranking teams in the state. It's probably Utah State 1, Utah 2. You could sway me one way or the other on those. And then right now I have Utah Valley actually ranked 82nd in my ratings, and BYU is ranked 83rd. So, I think the tie would have to go to Utah Valley there by virtue of winning in Provo. So I think that's your top four there in some order. But certainly Utah Valley has snuck under the radar this year, obviously, with those wins at BYU and winning at Oregon. Like I said, if they get in the tournament, they're going to be a decent seed. They still have to win their conference tournament to get in there, but you know, they could be a 13 seed and they could be matched up against a 4 seed that could be vulnerable. And we're talking about obviously Utah State and Utah as being the most likely tournament teams, but do not forget about Utah Valley. They are a legitimately, you know, pretty solid team this year.
What do you look at? You mentioned the win against Arizona for the University of Utah, but overall, how's their resume look in terms of an at-large spot coming out of the Pac-12?
Yeah, I mean, it's somewhat similar in many ways to Utah State. Like, the difference is they do have that really nice win over Arizona. But other than that, you know, it's pretty sketchy. Like, they don't have another quad one win. They don't have a ton of quad two wins. And their Pac-12 schedule was a little bit backloaded. Like, they will get, you know, they will get that home matchup with UCLA towards the end of the season. And, they'll get some other games that should be quad one games, you know, road game against Arizona State. Obviously, a road game against Arizona, although, you know, the Wildcats will be heavy favorites in that, despite the fact that they lost big at the Huntsman Center. So they still have a lot of work to do there. But it is interesting. I mean, there's clearly two locks from that league, you know, Arizona and UCLA, and then the rest is just up for grabs. And, you know, right now Utah's second in the standings, you know, right behind UCLA. So I think if they can maintain that, you know, they could keep pace with Arizona in the standings, maybe a game behind them by the end of the year. I mean, that's kind of their path to getting into the tournament. They're never going to have the real stacked resume short of, you know, beating Arizona and beating UCLA. Short of that, which seems unlikely. They're not going to have this super stacked resume of quad one wins. If they just compile a solid resume of quad two wins, a good conference record, and what's the fifth best conference in the country, they'll certainly get consideration at the end of the year.
So, Ken, when you talk about quads, and Scotty talks about quads a lot, and I don't quite follow exactly how teams are put into quads. Can you just break down quad ranking, what it means, and then let me know where BYU sits in that?
All right. Well, so it's just a kind of a shorthand to simplify teams' resumes. Theoretically, the committee is not totally just looking at quad one wins. They're able to differentiate between, you know, a good quad one win and a not as good quad one win. But the quads are, for a quad one win, it would be beating a top 50 team in a neutral site. And then they have adjustments for home and road. So I believe the home cutoff is top 30, and then the road cutoff is top 75. So if you beat a top 75 team on the road, that's a quad one win. So BYU in the net, I haven't looked them up, but they're in the 80s or 90s, I would assume. So, if somebody beats BYU, in Provo. They're not in that top 75, so it wouldn't be a quad one win this year. It'd be a quad two win. So that's the deal with that. It's just a way to try to, you know, again, have some shorthand here, reward teams for home wins. Make it, you know, obviously, beating the top, you know, 75th best team at home is not necessarily a great win, but beating them on the road is a lot more difficult in college basketball. And so that's the deal with the quads. It's a little confusing, but ultimately, I think it simplifies the team's resume. Sometimes it can distort it. Obviously, beating the number one team on the road is much more difficult than beating, you know, the number 50 team on a neutral site. Those are both quad one wins. But theoretically, the committee sees through that when they're meeting that final weekend to determine the field, and they will properly reward teams for, you know, various levels of wins, regardless of, you know, whether it's just quad one or not.
So I'm trying to there was that year that the Mountain West Conference, I think, got like four or five teams in. I think it was 2013 or 2012, around there. And then last year they had a good run in getting a bunch of teams in. Where do you think the Mountain West is this year? Because, again, you talk about those top five teams. This conference is as good as I remember it being. And, you know, I've been doing, you know, the play-by-play up there for 6 years now, so I don't go back a long ways with the conference. But this seems like it's about as good as it's been since that 2013 year.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. You know, it's right on the heels right now of the ACC and my conference ratings for sixth. And I think, you know, certainly, as we mentioned, the top of the league is just really competitive. There's no, like, outstanding team. You know, we thought maybe San Diego State would be, you know, maybe top 15, top 20 team. And they have played pretty close to that. I mean, they're 30th in my rating. So they're, you know, it's not like they've been that far off from it. But the reason people might think they're, you know, more of a disappointment than they are is that, you know, the Boise States and the New Mexicos of the world are playing well. Utah State, throw them in there. Obviously, Nevada, I think, has been a surprise as well. So, you know, all four of those teams have raised their level of play, and you just have this, you know, really solid group of five teams at the top. And then I think the middle of the league is better as well. I mean, there's a really, like, underrated story, I think, at San Jose State, Scotty.
Where, yes, absolutely. You know,
the Spartans are, you know, they have played quite well. I mean, they're on the edge of the top 100 in my ratings, and that for San Jose State is saying a lot. And, you know, people are drooling over the possibility of Rick Pitino, you know, having the job of his choice at the end of this year, whether it's Georgetown or St. John's or some other high-profile position on the East Coast. But if I was, you know, an athletic director in the Midwest of a school that, you know, had a job opening, certainly, like, Tim Miles would be, you know, the current head coach of San Diego, San Jose State would be on the top of my list. I mean,
yes,
you know, just the quick turnaround he has produced there has just been phenomenal at a school that has, you know, really zero basketball tradition. So they've been good. Air Force has been good. I mean, it's like, you know, you're exactly right. Like, this league is, you know, I think even a little bit better than it was last year, which was, I think, the high water mark since 2013. And so, you know, the next step is really getting these teams in the tournament and having them perform well, because obviously that step was not accomplished last year. The tournament performance was kind of a disaster, but certainly the regular season performance was very good, and it's been very good so far this year.
All right, Ken, off of what you just taught me, I'm going to throw a question at you. This is going to be kind of a more difficult one. So, speaking of quad one wins, if you were to beat all 10 of the current Big 12 teams on the road, as well as the next three additions, Houston, Cincinnati, and Central Florida, would every single one of those be a quad one right now?
Yes. Yes. All of those teams are in the top 75. Those are all quad one wins.
Oh, boy.
Which, which, you know, is why going, you know, being in the Big 12 is obviously scary. But on the other hand, if you have, you know, if you have a 3 week period where you play really well, you're going to boost your resume. You know, if you have a 3 week period where you play well in the WCC and you're, you know, beating Pepperdine and you're beating Loyola Marymount, and, like, no offense to those teams, like, Loyola Marymount beat Gonzaga, but, you know, if you're beating teams outside of the quad one level, you know, you're not improving your resume, despite the fact that you're playing out of your mind. But if you do that in the Big 12, you will be improving your resume. So, so I understand the concern in your voice, Hans, and, And certainly, based on the way BYU is playing this year, like, there's reason to be concerned. But if the program could just bump it up and get back into that top 50 level where they, you know, they were at, you know, the previous 3 years, you know, there will be so many opportunities for quality wins that, you know, the season, unless you just really tank early in the season, your hopes for an at-large bid are, you know, are really not over, you know, until you, you know, and you're officially like under 500 or something like that.
I mean, I'm just looking at your conference ratings. The difference between the Big 12 and the Big 10 is pretty significant. I mean, the Big 12 is the best conference, and frankly, it's not even close. Even by, you know, obviously the eyeball standpoint, we can see that. But even the computer rankings, like, yeah, there's a big gap between number one and number two.
Yeah, what's weird is that in the Big 12, so they have 10 teams right now, the top six have really separated themselves from the other four teams in the league. Like, the other four teams in the league are pretty good. Texas Tech, you know, we could have a discussion about that. They're somewhat mediocre. But the top six have separated themselves so much that the league might only get six bids. Like, the top six are beating up on those bottom four teams that, you know, those four, other four teams probably won't or may not get a bid. And the top six might all be, like, top four seeds. So it's going to be you know, interesting tournament for them. Obviously, when we get to the tournament, you know, one of the subtexts is, hey, you know, this conference is so good in the regular season, can they prove it in the tournament? And the Big 12, if they can't prove it in the tournament this year, there's should be an investigation, because all six of the other top six teams are going to be really highly seeded and in position to make, you know, deep runs.
So, Ken, yesterday, Scotty and I got into a conversation of how the transfer portal could potentially affect coaches, and I feel like a basketball coach could have much more impact from the portal. In the short time you've had an opportunity to assess portal impact on teams, how quick have you been able to see teams rebuild through the portal by grabbing a piece or two? And is it always the top tier teams, or, you know, the big conference teams that find a way to land those players?
Well, I think it's just like recruiting high school players. You know, the top teams are generally going to get the top transfers, but the transfer portal certainly helps, you know, mid-level teams or low major teams. I mean, I see that, you know, in my preseason ratings where, you know, a team like Southern Miss is like, you know, they were projected to be, I don't know where they were ranked in their conference by the media, but I'm fairly sure they were not ranked well. And certainly my ratings, they're ranked outside the top 300, and now they're, you know, one of the best teams in their league and pushing the top 100. And so there are ways, you know, certainly it's just level-based to me. Like, you know, a bottom feeder team is not going to get the best transfer available, but they can get a transfer that can improve their team. And that's obviously where we're at in this sport. Like, there's, you know, the notion that you're going to undergo a long-term rebuild is probably gone by the wayside. I mean, ideally, you're doing a little bit of both. You're grabbing guys that you can develop for 2 or 3 years, and, you know, the teams that keep guys for 2, 3, 4 years are generally really successful. It's very hard to do, but it still happens. And then, you know, you can supplement those guys with, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 really solid transfers. I think where the problems come in is that you really can't – I don't believe you can – support a great team with entirely transfers. Like, we've seen teams try to go that way. Eric Musselman famously, you know, especially when he was at Nevada, yeah, you know, loaded his team up with transfers, and he, you know, he made them a good team, but ultimately they can never really quite make that next level. Texas last year, when Chris Beard was coaching, you know, they loaded up on transfers and people thought, oh, this could be the best team in the country, and they kind of disappointed. And so you just can't, you know, you do need some continuity in your program still. Ideally, you're going to have, you know, 3 or 4 guys that have been in the program a while. Take the Tony Bennett, the Jay Wright method, you know, get some continuity in your program and grab, you know, 1 or 2 transfers that can contribute and will fit into the culture, because, you know, you have a culture based on the continuity that exists in the program.
So part of your team, you know, snapshots, you have D1 experience, and it's interesting because there's, you know, the old adage for coaches, get old and stay old. But the problem is, in this day and age, if you go out and you get a, you know, a generational talent, he's going to be gone after 1 year to the NBA. So is there any kind of a parallel between D1 experience and winning? The older you get, the more experience you have, does that translate to wins, or does that not necessarily the case? Because you could bring in a phenom and he's there for 1 year and then he's gone to the NBA.
Yeah, I think it, you know, really where it translates is more so at lower levels, you know, the mid-major level. If you have a really experienced team, that, like, it's hard to have a young team at the mid-major level and be successful, just because obviously you're not getting, you know, future NBA talent with those youngsters. You're getting guys that need to develop over, you know, 2 or 3 years. But at the very top of the sport, there's really no correlation. Like, you know, Alabama right now, not very experienced, led by an amazing freshman and Brandon Miller. They have other freshmen on that roster that are contributing. It's a, you know, a team that's kind of zagging while everybody else zigs, but, you know, one of the best teams in the country. And then, you know, you have other teams, you know, Houston's a little more experienced and obviously a very good team, you know, Purdue's a little more experienced and obviously a very good team. So, so you can really go both ways there. I do think, you know, we're in a little bit of a special time, obviously, with the COVID year. So getting older and staying old, like, you can be even older than ever before. And
yeah.
So, you know, freshmen are finding it a little more difficult to contribute in general this year. There's, I think the class of college freshmen is, you know, you can look at mock drafts and see it's a little bit down this year. Like, the top guys in the mock drafts are not college players. So maybe the crop of college freshmen is slightly down, but there's also the issue. There's just more experienced older guys in the game right now. And so, having a team that's, dependent on freshmen and being successful is nearly impossible right now.
Ken Pomeroy right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Ken, you're the best, man. We appreciate it. Looking forward to chatting with you again as we get closer to Selection Sunday.
Sounds great, guys. Thanks for having me on, and enjoy the weather, Scotty.
You got it.
You're the best, there. Ken. Thank you.
Ken Pomeroy right here on the Zone. Good dude, man. That dude has forgotten more about college basketball than we'll ever know, Hans.
He's just one of my favorite people.
Yeah.
You know, I remember listening to him on air for the very first time and thinking, boy, that's kind of geeky. Like, he geeks out. It's way out there. And then I met him and I'm like, this guy is as solid and a good dude that you would ever find in your life. And chock full of really good information. And yeah, it is a bit geeky because it really gets deep, but he's the best at his job of anybody in the country, and you've got to really respect that. But
by the way, the website kenpalm.com, go there. I am a huge fan, and I'm not, you know, Ken doesn't give me a freebie. There's a great snapshot that's there for free if you want to dig a little bit deeper. I think the subscription fee's like $20, and you get a great snapshot of every team. If you're trying to win your bracket come March, I highly, highly suggest you go to kenpalm.com. But he does such a tremendous job. And to your point, Hans, there is no emotions. There is no eyeball test. This is all strictly numbers and computer numbers. There's not any conjecture whatsoever on his rankings. They're all computer-based. It always makes me laugh when people tweet at him and say, oh, you hate Michigan, or you hate Clemson, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. He's like, dude, these are just numbers, man. That's all they are. They're just really, as you mentioned, geeky, very in-depth, but they're all numbers. There's no emotion. There's no human element to it at all.
So, Scotty, is this a crazy thought? And just asking him about the Big 12, if you were to take and compile the Big 12 as it will be next year, only one team would not be a quad one road win, and it would be BYU. That's the only of the other 13 would be a quad one win.
Yeah.
Even though Texas Tech is just getting beat to tar in that conference, they had some out of conference wins that kept them in that top 75. And you've got West Virginia that's down there at the bottom. They're fighting their butts off. And yeah, the top is definitely feeding on some of the bottom of that conference, but they're all ranked extremely high. Now, to Ken Pomeroy's point, BYU might be, if they were in the Big 12, because they would be getting maybe one or two quad one wins themselves that would keep them relevant and boosted a little bit. But getting feasted on by the West Coast Conference right now is not a good look for BYU.
No. That's no bueno right there.
Yeah.
And they've got a lot of work to do. And you know, to your point, we talked about the transfer portal. You can remake your roster pretty quick, but if you do it primarily through the transfer portal, it doesn't necessarily work for you. As Ken pointed out as well, you can't just automatically play. You've got to have a good culture in place. You've got to have a good locker room in place, and then infuse that with a transfer portal. But you just can't blow up a roster and then bring in a bunch of transfers and then hope that you can be compete from day one. It just doesn't work that way.
Well, and things aren't going to get any easier for BYU. They take on a top 22 ranked St. Mary's this Saturday, and then they've got LMU. They get LMU at home, so they should be able to avenge the loss that they had to LMU on the road. But you go into that St. Mary's game, let's say you lose that game, you're looking at 2-5 in the last seven. 2-5 against West Coast Conference teams in the last seven. So they got to find a way to get that St. Mary's win at home. I think they can, and I think they probably will, because playing there is difficult. But, I'm just looking across the board. UVU and South Dakota are really the only bottom feeders that were, well, not UVU, but they were really the only the lesser teams, lesser conference that you would think wouldn't get a win in the Marriott Center, and they took it to them.
Yeah.
Utah Valley didn't just eke past BYU. They beat them soundly in that game, and they did it at home. So I can see St. Mary's getting a win. I just hope BYU is able to find their bearings a little bit and stop the bleeding.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Mark's with us from Wasatch Medical, and we just lost Mark. But I will say this, if you're struggling in the bedroom, call 801-901-8000. That's 801-901-8000. Don't worry about that little blue pill anymore. No needles, no surgery. Nobody wants to deal with that when we're talking about that region south of the border. So come on. Give them a call right now, 801-901-8000. You can talk to a physician. You can get the free assessment, all kinds of goodies for free. All you have to do is call 801-901-8000. That's 801-901-8000. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
This is DJ and PK.
Joined now by Tom McMillan, Lead One CEO.
We talk to coaches, and they tell us things crazy, out of control, those types of words with the transfer and the NIL. It's certainly something that they say. What can be done to put them under control while still allowing the principles of giving as much freedom to the student-athlete as possible?
It takes a real crisis sometimes for Congress to act. I have heard from senators and congressmen that their concern is more awareness of this on the Hill. There's a more ripe environment, if you will, to legislate on the NIL front and to try to bring a national standard to it to make sure that it's not a recruiting inducement or a transfer inducement, but legitimate NIL. I'm optimistic that something can get done in the next year or so.
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 to 10. Presented by Murdoch Chevrolet. Proudly serving Utah since 1926. On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
It's time to saddle up and talk about the winners and the losers. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, here's the good.
Good, the bad, the ugly right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Hans, let's talk about the good, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it, man. It's always good to have a little good feeling going through your Wednesday. So, believe it or not, the good involves Jimmy Butler. Might be the first time Jimmy's been in the good, but I think he deserves it. So you had this family of five that lives in Argentina that decided that they wanted to come watch an NBA game. And the little 12-year-old in that family, his name's Felipe, absolutely loves and adores Jimmy Butler. Thinks the world of him, loves him as a player. So mom and dad headed back to the United States. They were coming to visit Florida, decided, all right, we'll stop in at Miami. We'll get our tickets, and we'll take little Felipe to a Jimmy Butler game. They bought their tickets. They showed up at the game, and little Felipe had a sign that hung over his head that says, "Dear Jimmy, we flew 4,405 miles to come see you play today. Can we get a photo with you?" And they come to find out, Scotty, that Jimmy Butler is a late scratch.
Oh, man.
All right, so how is Jimmy Butler in the good? Well, the Miami Heat, he gets put on the big screen with that sign, and they went and talked to the family, all five of them, and sure enough, they are from Argentina. They did fly in for the game. They did want to meet or did want to watch Jimmy Butler. And Miami was like, oh, well, here's some floor seats to make up for it. They put him down by the floor, and they gave him a jersey, and they watched the game and sent him home. Well, Jimmy Butler got a hold of them shortly thereafter, had them come back to the facility where he hung out with them, took them on a tour, took multiple pictures with them, and tried to treat him to a good time because he felt bad that some of his fans missed him being on the court.
Well, that's good. How about this? Just go play the game.
That's another good idea.
All the free stuff.
That's a good idea.
I don't know, man. I struggle with this. I don't know. The NBA's got a problem here with the perception of their players shutting things down and not playing. And look, you know, the Lakers come to Salt Lake, and or you know, the Golden State Warriors, you know, whatever. And let's say back, you know, on Christmas, you know, little Johnny opens up his stocking and he sees two tickets, or you know, a ticket for the family to go see the Jazz take on the Golden State Warriors, and he's got his Steph Curry jersey, and he loves Klay Thompson, and he's so fired up, and the parents saved and put the cards, you know, put the tickets on a credit card or whatever, because that they know that's what he wants to see, is see Steph Curry play an NBA game. And so the family packs up, they go to the arena, and all of a sudden they get word, oh yeah, load management, Steph Curry's not playing, or Klay Thompson's not playing, or LeBron James, you know, like the stars of the NBA. But I also understand that, you know, the Spurs were able to extend the career of Tim Duncan and Manu and Tony Parker and win extra championships because they did that. So I see both sides to it, but I hate it when, you know, the consumer ends up getting screwed over because of, you know, superstars don't want to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
All 82.
Yeah, and these stars can't find every person that came just to watch them,
yeah,
1,200-mile trip and spent $12,000 to get to the venue to come watch the game. You can't take care of all of them. Just play the game as much as you possibly can. But I get it, too. It's a tough position, really, to be in. The NBA has pushed these players to the furthest extent possible with 82 games. They just pushed them as far as humanly possible.
Yeah.
So I understand when the NBA player is like, well, I'd like to play more than just 7 years before my body breaks down. So
you guys think of Steve Kerr's comments, play less games.
Yeah.
Eliminate
he
that.
Said
like he's
moving to 72,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, moving to 72.
Eliminate
the back-to-backs, which is going to it's gonna take a hit. I mean, owners are going to take a hit. You're going to lose revenue. But
yeah, like, by the way, that will never happen.
No,
right.
Because players won't take less and owners won't take less.
Yeah. Yeah.
Greed has forced these players to be
so
off the court.
The fans will forever just get just they'll just get
what did you say?
What?
Like?
What? You did not just dump that.
Rewind that.
I did. It was.
Rewind that. Oh, I
they'll
want that beeped out.
I meant to say
I want
shaft.
That beeped out.
You know what?
Hands,
I have the
walk
controls.
In that studio.
You do not. I
all right, I'm going to head into the studio. Scotty, give me a minute.
Oh, like you know what you're
I
doing.
Want that,
get out of
I
here.
I want that replayed with a beep on it over and over
fine.
And over again.
I'll do that. He's actually coming in here. Get out of here.
What buttons do I push?
Oh, you want to know what buttons? You don't
See,
even
tell
know.
Tell me what buttons I push. Right here.
Yeah, play that one right there. Hit that. Hit that. Go ahead. Go ahead.
But he has a team to.
Nope, that's not it.
Lloyd, you look, if we're all about consistency, we're all about fairness on this show, right? Follow Hands on Twitter and replay that drop.
I'm not following Hands on Twitter, so don't even go there. I'll tell you what. Hands follows me back on Twitter. I will create it.
Okay. I will follow you back.
But so, there's no follow me back. You just do it.
Even Christian Cox feels like you have a potty mouth.
Fans will get the shaft.
Even Coach Mac is like, Lloyd.
Lloyd. Oh. All right. There's your good. Let's get to the bad.
Now the bad.
Hands, Coben Porter. He's a sophomore guard at the University of Denver. He's also the brother of Nuggets forward Michael Porter Jr. Was arrested early Sunday in connection with a fatal crash in Denver. He was arrested on suspicion of vehicular homicide and reckless driving after he ran a red light and then crashed into another car near the University of Denver's campus around 2 a.m. The driver of the other vehicle died at the scene, and the passenger in that car also seriously injured. According to a police affidavit acquired by the Denver Post, Coben Porter had bloodshot and watery eyes, slurred and mumbling speech, and a strong odor of an alcohol beverage on his breath. He was released on $20,000 bond on Sunday afternoon. His brother, Michael Porter Jr., was not involved in the crash. But he has been rehabbing from a torn ACL suffered in the offseason. He did average 12 points a game in 28 games as a freshman last year. But really horrible, disgusting. And if he was driving drunk and he caused the death of someone, then I hope he goes to prison and he spends a considerable amount of time there.
Wow. When did that happen? That just happened?
On Sunday.
Oh, man. That is so, it's just terrible. It's story after story. It feels like we could feel that in the bad and ugly every single day. In fact, talking of things that you can fill in every single day, geez, how about we jump to the ugly?
Yeah, let's do it.
And of course, the ugly.
So we were just talking about different spousal abuse, different just domestic violence that has been occurring so frequent around the world of sports. Everybody from the president of the UFC, Dana White, on down to now Mike Clevenger. A woman is claiming to be the mother of his 10-month-old daughter, said that he abused her, strangling her on one occasion, and now Major League Baseball is investigating these allegations, Scotty. This woman, her name is Olivia Feinstead. She made the claims in a series of social media posts that she put up yesterday. She alleged that Clevenger terrorized her during their relationship. In one of her posts, Feinstead said that he threw an iPad at me while I was pregnant. He strangled me. He also accused him of throwing chew spit on the 10-month-old. Says that... obviously, these are all accusations. They are being investigated. There aren't any charges, no arrests at this point. But really heavy accusations coming across social media. I don't think that's the place to do it. I'd like it to you know, you go to proper authorities and you get this taken care of, especially when it's happening. Hopefully, these women can stay safe. Hopefully, they get to the bottom of this investigation. But Clevenger's been around the league. He'd been around Major League Baseball for a lot of years. He had a couple of seasons with the Padres, and the Chicago White Sox signed him now in free agency, so he's currently a White Sox. Spent most of his career in Cleveland. He's been around the league for a lot of years, and this investigation is probably going to get ugly.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you know, and... I agree with you, too. You know, you would love to see action taken when it happened. You know, and maybe she tried and things didn't work out, so she goes to social media as a last resort. But, yeah, this is one of those. You certainly need to let this process play out and see what happens. But these are some really serious, ugly accusations for sure. Jeez. All right, 1247. There you go. Good, the bad, the ugly. Coming up next, Whole World News. Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome
On Rival with Scotty.
Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
Sean O'Connell, OC, SiriusXM, Pac-12 Today. What has been the biggest turnaround for the Pac-12 that we suddenly have five or six teams that are contenders?
Well, it's the transfer portal. As much as people like to complain about it and deride the way that kids don't want to stick around in one place and develop, if you're a fan of Pac-12 football, you should love the transfer portal, because in one off-season cycle, we didn't know if USC was going to be back. That experiment worked. Lincoln Riley got that thing turned around very rapidly. Kalen DeBoer did an incredible job. The transfer portal has benefited the Pac-12 conference more than it has benefited any other Power 5 conference.
It's unrivaled. Afternoons from 3 to 6, presented by G2G Bars. Perfect for anyone who needs a quick, tasty, and nutritious boost. The 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Go!
It's time to span the globe for the hard-hitting news you care about. Well, not really. But hey, at least we found it interesting. This is Whole World News on 97.5. The KSL Sports Zone.
We got the whole world in our hands.
You got the whole world.
Hands and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Hey, it's a Wednesday, which means it's a win ticket Wednesday. Oh, here you go, Hands. Caller number 12 right now, 801-575-ZONE. That's 801-575-ZONE. And you'll win a pair of tickets to see Nickelback and Brantley Gilbert in concert at USANA Amphitheater coming up on July 6th. You want tickets? Be caller number 12. Again, 801-575-ZONE. That's 801-575-ZONE. And you will get tickets to go see Nickelback in concert coming up at USANA.
Nickelback hate is unfounded and irresponsible. I think that is a heck of a band. I like their music. I thought they were fantastic through the early 2000s. I thought that his pairing with the lead singer from Saliva on that Spider-Man song, that hero song, was awesome. And I'm a big fan. I like them. So call now, get yourself a pair of tickets, get out there to USANA and watch what I would say is a great band.
Yeah. You know what? And I've heard Nickelback shows are really, really good. Like their concerts, they put on a hell of a show.
Do you think that it drives them nuts that somehow they became a laughingstock?
You know what? It's a really good question, because it just shows you what world we're in right now, where people like to make fun of things and they don't really know why.
Yeah.
Like, it just, once that snowball starts going down the hill and picking up steam, like, you just can't stop it, and all the little sheep on there and Twitter like to make funny jokes and stuff, when in reality they have no idea what they're talking about. Like, I used a Nickelback song as kind of the back in the day when I was in charge of running the network and when it really the imaging and the sound and stuff like that. I used a Nickelback song for the imaging for a season, and it was probably some of the best imaging we had for jazz games. I mean, I can't remember what the song was, but I mean, it was awesome and it sounded great. It set the scene really well. And, you know, we kind of that year we wanted to treat the broadcast kind of like a rock concert, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm with you. I don't hate on Nickelback.
Oh, that's good.
All good.
Well, Scotty, for Whole World News, we got to take a trip to Michigan, Otsego County, Michigan, which is northern Michigan. And this just goes to your point that drunk driving can be as idiotic as anything you could possibly do. A young woman was pulled over by Michigan State Police, and as she was pulled over, she quickly called her friend because she knew that she was driving and she knew that she was drunk, and so she called her friend to come help her. As the police officers were going through the checks and realizing that this young woman was intoxicated, her friend pulled up. It literally pulled up in a car right behind her and came over to the troopers and started saying, "Hey, you know, I've got it. It's fine. I'll take her. Everything's fine. I've got this under control. Let me please just take her home." And the officer looked at her and thought, this can't be right. She reeked of booze. she was kind of wobbling as she was walking up to the officers. And sure enough, Scotty, she was drunk as well. So the young woman that was pulled over initially drunk got popped with an OWI, which is operating while intoxicated. And her friend that pulled up also arrested for OWI. Both of them taken into holding for being intoxicated while drinking or while driving.
Oh, I mean, I admire the loyalty, but sometimes that borders on stupidity too.
I just can't even imagine it. Yeah. I can't imagine the level of stupidity. First of all, driving drunk. How dumb can you be? Second of all, for crying out loud, you're drunk and your friend calls you. Just say, hey, you're going to have to call Natalie because, you know, Sarah, I was with you. Oh, by the way, yeah, they were at the same party.
Of course they were, yeah.
That's why she called her to come get her, but obviously didn't realize she'd get popped with the OWI too.
Well, it's like when Lloyd curses on the radio and I'm like, hey, Lloyd, you know, I got your back. We'll get through this. Normally I would do that, but Lloyd had sold me out so many times that it's just like, hey, buddy, you're on your own.
Hey, I learned from watching you, okay?
even Sam Farnsworth thinks you've got a potty mouth.
Yeah.
It's a lot. I just actually listened to it. It's way worse.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, Derek Favors sitting at a McDonald's thinks that's getting out a little out of hand.
Got a little loose.
Even Jeremiah Jensen thinks you confuse your words.
Howard Beck's going to join us coming up in our next segment. Mark's with us from Wasatch Medical, 801-901-8000. That's the number to call. And Mark, you know, we joke about this all the time, but there's probably guys have been sitting in their car and they've been punched in that number into the old phone, but they just can't hit send. There's a little bit of pride involved, but what you guys do, it's discreet, it's important, and it can help relationships.
Absolutely, and guys need to realize it's not just impacting them, it is impacting the relationship. Guys are embarrassed about this, guys don't want to talk about this, and those are the number one reasons why guys don't take any action. But guys also need to realize that ED is a blood flow problem in most cases, and at Wasatch Medical Clinic, we use no pills, no injection, and no surgery. We use a breakthrough technology called acoustic wave therapy, which treats the root cause of ED. Again, in most guys, that is the lack of blood flow.
It all starts, though, with that phone call. You set up the appointment, and talk us through that, because there's a lot of free involved there.
Oh, absolutely. And guys, also realize that there is zero pain involved here either. This is a non-invasive procedure. Most guys are going to need several treatments over the course of a 2 to 3 week period. Those treatments last about 15 minutes each. That's it. You come in, we have a small device that's placed on the skin that delivers gentle pressure waves to the blood vessels. It helps to repair those blood vessels, which over time have become damaged, opening those blood vessels up, giving you an increase in blood flow where and when you need it the most. But the first step, call Wasatch Medical Clinic right now. You will get the exam, the assessment, even that blood flow ultrasound with our doctor at no cost. In addition to that, a gift which can produce rapid results for those intimate moments. And that's one, guys, you're really going to like. But call today, the number 801-901-8000.
Again,
801-901-8000.
Again, 801-901-8000 right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.